Hello, dear meditators, dear friends. Welcome back to the podcast Meditation with Raphael. I'm your host, Raphael, and I am so glad to be with you here today. I'm so honored to be part of your journeys, to be part of your lives, and so thank you so much for letting me in your ears, in your cars, in your homes, in your heart sometimes. So I really appreciate it. And today I want to be talking about the law of attraction. I want to talk about manifestation. I sent an email in my mailing list a few days ago, and it was received quite well, very well, in fact. But that is, you know, it's normal, since most of the people that subscribe to my weekly letter already know me a little bit and know what I'm about and know my philosophy. Some people didn't take the email well because they believe in these things, in the law of attraction, in manifestation, and so on. And although sometimes, or all the time, most of the time, I say, you know, there is no truth, there's just different interpretations of different concepts. Sometimes there are just blatant lies, right? There are not only, you know, it's not because there's no truth that everything is the truth, if that makes sense. And when it comes to things like the law of attraction and all of these types of schemes, I feel a sense of duty in warning you about these schemes so that you don't fall into them. So in today's podcast, I'm going to read the letter that I sent, which is also a blog article that you can read on Medium or on my website. I'll put all the links in the show notes. But I think it's important, so I'm going to read it and I'm going to comment it and we're going to be talking about it. And then I would like to share some alternatives to these thinking. And one of the books that I often suggest people read when they're interested in the law of attraction and in manifestation is a book called Rethinking Positive Thinking. Rethinking Positive Thinking. And it was written by Gabriel Otegen. I hope that I pronounce the name right. And I'm going to be reading a few notes from this book and we're going to be talking about it. Okay, so yeah, let's go on with the episode. Okay, so as I mentioned, I want to use this article I wrote, since a lot of people talked about it, as a basis for today's episode. And if you have any questions or if you have any feedback, don't hesitate to send me an email or to send me a DM on Instagram, on Twitter. Everything is linked below so that you can reach me and so that we can engage in conversation. And if you want, you can also record a little audio message and I'll be happy to put it on the podcast in the next episode and we can answer questions like that. Okay? So I wrote, I'm often asked about manifestation or the law of attraction, how to and does it work? And so actually I wrote this letter just after getting one of these emails, one of these questions on, you know, what do you think about the law of attraction? Is it something that I need to think about? What do I think? How do I do these manifestations? And so I wrote, I'm not quite sure why I get so many of these questions on the law of attraction. Maybe it is because I teach meditation and therefore I go into the woo-woo and esoteric category, probably. And I do believe that there's always a little misunderstanding that meditation does not necessarily need to be woo-woo. And thinking about consciousness, thinking about thoughts, talking about self-transcendence so that you can become the best version of who you are. I think this is practically opposite to woo-woo. It's very practical. I continue. When somebody is interested in the law of attraction, usually this is the question that they're actually asking. Can I make my dreams come true by closing my eyes and wishing for them to happen with little or preferably zero effort? And the answer is simple, no. This is what we call wishful thinking. And that has never had any positive consequences on anything important or of any kind of significance. And there's a reason why the law of attraction is so popular. And for me, it goes hand in hand with the Become a Millionaire in 1 week by working 15 minutes per day programs, those schemes, you know, or the lose 30 pounds in 1 week without working out, without going to the gym, and with eating pizza and ice cream. In fact, the more you eat ice cream, the more you lose weight. And these programs exist, and they continue to exist, and they're continuing to be very, very, very popular. They're all over the internet, and new ones come out every single day. And the reason is because they work. They work. These programs work. And of course, I mean that they work for the people making them, not for the people buying them. People making these kind of schemes do make a lot of money. Sometimes I digress here, but I'm always thinking about, you know, those spams that you get in your emails. Often it's somebody in Africa, somebody got diseased, and so we need a place to put $30 million or something like this. You've been chosen, you know, you won this, you won that, because we need your help. And if you can give us 500 euros, then we'll transfer the $30 million, you know. So, and I always wonder, well, do these work? And I actually did a little bit of research on that, and they do work. Some people do believe these things. And it's maybe a complete other topic, and so I'm not sure that I want to get into this right now. But in the last 4 or 5 years, we've been exposed to so many lies and so much dishonesty by politicians, by governments, by certain media outlets, by and without any consequences, you know. And this has changed the culture, and it changes the way we think, it changes the way we act, it changes the way we read, it changes everything. And it's what I read an article not long ago, I think it was in the New Yorker, I'm not quite sure, but it's a very interesting topic on modern propaganda, which is just the continuous lies and the lack of opportunity for people to assimilate them fast enough. And so it actually becomes a reality to a lot of people. And of course, we've seen this in the political spheres in the last few years. But I don't want to digress too much into this. But people do get involved into these scams, and it's pity. And these types of scams make me think of, it's the first thing that I thought about when I thought about talking about the law of attraction. It's a scam. That's just what it is. It's another program, another book. And I want to know why. And I don't really think that there is an answer really of why, but at least we can protect ourselves, and for me, protect my audience, and for you, protect your communities and your families and your friends on these types of scams. And so, why do people buy them, and why are these programs, and why is the law of attraction more popular every single year? You see it more and more on YouTube, on all over the internet. And the answer, as I said, I don't have the answer, but one of the answers I can think of is quite simple. It's not only have we become more lazy in our day of information, of constant data, we've also been craving speed over everything else for at least the last 10, 15 years. And in 2021, we're addicted to this speed. We're addicted to the speed of information, for the speed of data. And it doesn't matter if it is true or if it's not true. We always want to have these shortcuts. That's how it is for, I see it in different areas of life. I see it, of course, in meditation. This is because, you know, I'm very involved in this. I teach it to a lot of people, and they want immediate results. I want awakening. I want to be a Buddha. But I don't want to meditate for 20 minutes. It has to be, I want to become a Buddha in 5 minutes. Go. Do it. Teach me. I'll give you 20 euros, you know, or like, it happened to me often. It happened to me, like, somebody, you know, I have this buy me a coffee. So I do most of my work for free and some people donate to support the channel. And I had somebody, hey, I bought you a coffee, which was $5. And I did one of your meditation and I don't think I was enlightened. So this happens a lot. It happens in art also. It happens in music. You know, you take one piano lesson and you're asking, why can't I play Chopin waltz or Liszt or Beethoven sonatas? And you might chuckle and you might think that I'm being a little bit facetious, but I'm not. It happens all the time. We want speed and we want instant satisfaction, right? And so we're completely addicted to this data. We're addicted to our gadgets. And as I said in the letter, in 2021, I suspect very few people sit on the toilet without a phone or an iPad or a tablet, one of these devices. Nobody waits for the bus without these devices. The other day we went past a restaurant and we there was different couples. There was like four or five couples and they were all on their phones. They were all on their phones. This is a scene that you see often. Now it's even a little bit more shocking because in my part of the world anyway, we went back into lockdown. So going to the restaurant is kind of a, not only it's a little bit of a risk, but it's, you know, you have to present some documents, the vaccination, and you have to, it's you have to jump through hoops. It's not like, oh, I'm just going to go to the restaurant. No, you have to show the QR code and so on, right? So it's a little bit more of an event. And so you would think, oh, it's a little bit more of a treat and you're going to go with your girlfriend, with your wife, with your husband, with your friend, with your sister, whatever, and you're going to have a good time together and not just spend all of your time on the screen. And why is this? Again, because we're looking for this instant gratification. We're going to take a picture of our plate, and if you would get one like on Instagram or on Facebook or on Twitter, this is way more satisfying than the actual experience of eating a delicious plate of food or having a comment on Instagram or on Facebook becomes way more rewarding to our brains than actually having a meaningful conversation with somebody that you care. That you care about, right? And this has become a little bit tragic, really. It has become a little bit tragic. And so then I continue and I talk about a million shortcuts for a million shortcomings, which is what we were talking about right now. And I say, we find the millions of shortcuts to all our shortcomings on the internet. A like on a picture of us on the mountain on Facebook gives way more satisfaction and pleasure than the experience of that mountain. And this is because it's true, it's scientifically proved, because we are hormonally addicted now to these social media platforms and to these satisfactions, this recognition of getting a like or a subscriber and things like this. And I'm well placed to talk about it because, of course, I'm a content creator. And so there was a period of time where I used to always check my analytics and my stats, and I've been through that rabbit hole. So I set myself a set of really important rules. I don't watch my Google Analytics and my YouTube Analytics more than once a month. I have it in my calendar. This I'll check, and I'll check the subscribers. I have some different software so that I can post on social media without actually going there. And I do my YouTube scheduling and my podcast scheduling, but that's about all. And so this is a realization that we are lost. We as a human society have become completely lost, and it's insane. And we've lost touch with reality. We're more attached to other people's thoughts than our own experiences. We trust other people's egos more than our natural senses, than our instincts. And so to go back to the law of attraction, because I've deviated a bit, of course it's a scam. There's no two way about it. I'm not going to say there's no truth, there's a truth. No, this is a scam. It's just a lie that makes a lot of money for the people selling these lies. And I've read The Secret. I think this is one of the most popular books on on the law of attraction. I read it just for a little bit of a laugh, and it's just I don't really have words for it. It's just insane. It's silly. It made me laugh a few times, but it's insane, right? There's this part with this guy that, you know, he's like, yeah, every night for, I don't know, a few weeks, I imagine somebody sending me $10 million. And one day I go check the mail and there's a check of $10 million. Wow. And some people are really like, wow, this is incredible. I can do everything like this. I can align the universe to serve me. Why? Why would the, if there was such a thing, why would the universe serve you in particular? Why? What is so special? We're so special because we're not special. We're so special because we're not separated from each other. What is special is our belonging, our being one entity of life. That is really special. What is special about our egos? And even more than that, all of these programs, of course, promise extrinsic rewards, right? And I don't know. I think I need to close the subject so that I don't continue and go in a loop there. But what I like to analyze is, what are the things in common between all of these scams? Get rich fast, get skinny fast, get famous fast, and the law of attraction, of course. Very, very attractive commonalities. First of all, they're very, very easy. You have to do no work. You have to, you know, don't do anything. Just wish, right? Wish upon the star, as we said before. It requires no effort. It cuts out all of the work. You know, get skinny by not going to the gym and eating ice cream. Well, that sounds pretty good. Or get rich by working only 5 minutes per week. That sounds pretty good also. And of course, the rewards will come really, really, really fast. So at the end of the month or something. And talking about these results, of course, they're all extrinsic as opposed to intrinsic. So we're talking about money most of the time. We're talking about love, but not real love, not the love that you give, but the love that you receive from somebody, I don't know, like that you've idealized somehow for some reason. Or six-pack abs. Forget about health or fitness. Just the abs is enough. The fame. Oh, you know it. But imagine if it was true. Imagine if it was true. Would this make you happy? Would this make you fulfilled? Would you be proud? Even if it was true that you were to receive a check in the mail because you wished on it, would you gain self-respect that way? Would you feel dignified? And that's the thing. It's like, it promises all these amazing things, but it guarantees you that you'll become completely miserable. Because if you follow these charlatans, you'll lose your ability to trust yourself. Very simply, you'll lose all your self-respect, you'll lose your self-love, and you'll lose hope. Hope in your ability to act with virtue. And so if you do want success, what I always propose is, well, you want success, first of all, define success. What is success? Success depends on the process, not on the outcome. The law of attraction only depends on the outcome, not the there is no process. You just wish and then it happens. And what we learn here and in Stoic philosophy and with great teachers like John Wooden, that says success is knowing that you did the best you could, focusing on the process and then the outcome, either it happens or it doesn't happen, but that doesn't depend on you, and so you shouldn't be attached to that. But if you have a certain vision of success, fine, that's okay. Analyze successful people. Who did it before you? How did they do it? Notice the patterns. Model these patterns. Do your best work. Create value. Live with a purpose to serve. Live with a purpose to serve. When you think of your purpose, think of your duty. Don't only think about what's in it for me. And of course, do all these things with integrity, with authenticity, with love. Notice that it's all about the connection, the symbiosis to something way bigger, way more important than $1 million and a six pack. And you know what else this law of attraction, or this manifestation, as they say, do you know what else it produces? A feeling that we are individuals that are separated from all other people, right? Because I'll wish it will happen to me. It won't happen to my neighbor, it'll happen to me. That separates you. It separates you from God, if you believe in God. Separates you from the universe, if that's what you believe in. Separates you from nature, from society, from other beings, from consciousness. That we, the I, the ego, the self, is more important in that case than any other person or any other being in all of the galaxies. It's all about me, 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 myself, and I. It's not about you. It's not about them. It's not about us. It's again the illusion of the ego resisting. It nurtures greed. It nurtures selfishness. It nurtures entitlement. It nurtures vice. I am so special. That's what it makes you think. I am so special. But who is this I that you talk about? I deserve good things to happen to me without me being a good thing to others, of course. Again, what is that I? Certainly not the highest version of yourself. How can it be? How can you be a hero to your loved ones, to your communities, a protector? It's all about you. So think again when we talk about the law of attraction. When you think about the law of attraction, think again. Don't get fooled. Most importantly, don't fool yourself. And don't try to fool others also with this naive optimism, this wishful thinking, this scam. Do the work. That's the only thing you can do. Do the work. Focus on the process, not on the outcome. Live with virtue, or try. Maybe you fail. Try again. You fail. Try again. And then you fail again. Try again. Every day. And then you try again. And then you do it again. Remember, if you want to grow to the highest version of yourself, you have to dive deep. If you want to grow, dig deep. And all of these promises of manifestation, of the law of attraction, that blocks you from going deep. It's just shallow. It's just on the surface of what you don't even really want. It's always focusing on the means to an end, but not on the end. It focuses on the money, but not what you would do with the money, what the money would represent. Let's think about it. Money doesn't exist. Money doesn't. I'm not saying that money is bad or anything, but like, surely you're not craving a little piece of paper with deceased presidents on them. And even relationships, you're not craving a relationship. Maybe you're lonely. You're craving self-approval, self-compassion. You're craving love. $1 million in the post. That would not bring joy. And if it was true that it would happen again, then it would happen again and again and again and again and again. And what you would consider blocks of happiness are going faster and faster and faster. They're fleeting always. There's never this lasting joy. It just disappears and disappears. And it's like drinking and drinking and drinking and drinking and drinking. Boom, you die of thirst because you drank too much. You're never satisfied because you focus on the extrinsic goals, not on goals that will make you a better person, live with a better soul, eudaimonia, summum bonum, all of the lessons that we learn here about the Stoics, about Tao, the way. So think again. And I want to give you an alternative that I quite like, and this is something I suggest always, and I'm not even sure that it's something I want to do right now, because I think that we've had enough, but I do want to talk about this book, and I do want to tell you, you know, if you want to read the book, to suggest that you read the book. And so it start in the introduction, she says, Gabriel Otegen, the author of the book, says, "What is your dearest wish? What dreams do you have for the future? What do you want to be or to do? Imagine your dream coming true. How wonderful would it be? How fulfilling? What holds you back from realizing your wish? What is it in you that stops you from really going for it? Rethinking Positive Thinking is a book about wishes and how to fulfill them. It draws on 20 years of research in the science of motivation, and it presents a single surprising idea. The obstacles that we think most impede us from realizing our deepest wishes can actually hasten their fulfillment." End of quote. And so, make a note that what she's saying, she's not only talking about the wishes, she's talking about, of course, how are you going to make those wishes come true? And notice, of course, that obstacles are part of the process. And as Marcus Aurelius said, the impediment to action precedes action. We talked about it a little bit when we talked about Ryan Holiday's book, The Obstacle is the Way. What stands in the way becomes the way. So this Gabrielle, she's one of the world's leading researchers in this science of motivation. And it's a really good book because it goes in the opposite direction to precisely what we were talking about now, just wish and it will happen. No, she has a whole process that I want to talk about a little bit now. Let me just continue with another quote. She says, "If you want to unwind, you can take some deep breaths, get a massage, or go for a walk. But you can also try simply closing your eyes and fantasizing about some future outcome that you might enjoy. But what about when your objective is to make your wish a reality? Right? The last thing you want to be is relaxed. You want to be energized to get off the couch and lose those pounds or find the job or study for that test. And you want to be motivated enough to stay engaged even when the inevitable obstacles arise. We've seen that the principle of dream it, wish it, do it does not hold true. And now we know why. In dreaming it, you undercut the energy you need to do it. You put yourself in a temporary state of bliss, calmness, and lethargy." End of quote. Sorry, I think we've all been in that situation, right? You dream about some outcome maybe, and it just feels really, really good because it's like being, well, exactly what it is. It's like being in a dream, and it is a dream. It's not reality. It is just a dream. And so you think about it and it makes you feel good. And for some moments, you feel like, wow, you've achieved something. And then you either open your eyes or you continue with your day, and then you just feel defeated because it was not true. That's what happens when you lie to yourself, when you're not honest with yourself. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't dream. You should dream. It's nice. But you always have to have these constraints of reality, because otherwise you'll suffer. I'm not saying like you shouldn't have these dreams, because, you know, like, we need to be serious, we need to be real, we need to be here, we need to be now, and all of these things, you know. We don't have to. Sometimes you want to dream, go dream. But remember that it's just a dream. And this is not to, you know, to break your joy or to be some sort of a party pooper. It's to protect yourself. It's to protect you. Because your brain is much smarter than that. He'll know, ah, don't fool me. If you're thinking, you know, under the covers, oh, wow, I'm such, you know, I have a six pack and I'm rich and I'm on my boat and it's beautiful. And then you get out of your covers, it's freezing cold and you have to go take the underground to go to your 9-to-5 that you hate with that boss that always bugs you. This is how you create your own suffering. You create your own suffering. And this takes away so much energy. It takes so much energy. It takes so much energy that you don't have the energy then to actually make a plan and get things done. Another quote from the book. She says, back in 1990, when my research was first beginning to show that positive fantasies were not helping people achieve their wishes, I was disappointed. I had embarked on studying dreams not merely because I found them interesting, but because I had hoped that dreaming might help people who were having trouble achieving wishes, large and small. It was difficult to focus my work on fantasies knowing that they made individuals continue to struggle, so I wondered if there was anything I could do to the process of dreaming to turn things around and make dreams more helpful for achieving wishes. In particular, since positive fantasies tended to relax people, was there a way that I could use dreaming to wake them up, get them into gear and motivate them to succeed? I reasoned that the best way to get people up and moving was to ask them to dream and then to confront them right away with the realities that stood in the way of their dreams. I called this confrontation mental contrasting. If I could ground fantasies in a reality through mental contrasting, I might be able to circumvent the calming effects of dreaming and mobilize dreams as a tool for prompting directed action. End of quote. This is a tool that actually I use a lot with my students and with my coaching clients. In my coachings, sometimes we talk about productivity. Often we talk about productivity and how to make the most amazing days possible, right? The best days that you can. And so one of the exercises that we do is that we imagine a day that is just perfect. The perfect, perfect day. You might say there's no perfection. Well, if you put your imagination to it, you might find a perfect day. Like, you know, you wake up without your alarm clock, you're energized. You do, you know, you all the plan that you had to do, your routine, you do it well, you do your beautiful meditation, you do your workout, you're happy, you're in a good mood, you do some reading, you're very productive, you get on these tasks, you do your work and so on, right? The perfect, perfect, perfect day. Then you spend some time with your loved ones, everybody's happy, you're sitting next to the fireplace and you go to bed with a sense of love and achievement and beautiful, right? So you imagine your perfect, 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 perfect day from the moment you wake up to the moment that you go to sleep. And then you sprinkle constraints of reality. And this is what's the difference between wishful thinking and actually living the dream, is you sprinkle those constraints of reality. Constraints of reality may include, well, stuff happens, shit happens. Constraints of reality can be like, why? Actually, I want to meditate for an hour, but I only have 20 minutes. Constraints of reality can be, you know, I want to go to the beach, but I live in the North Pole. I don't know, but, you know, the constraints of reality, you just sprinkle them on that perfect day and then you make a plan. And she says, I quote, our study suggested that mental contrasting could help people do both things, engage even more forcefully when it made sense to engage, disengage even more forcefully when that made sense. It functioned as a self-regulation tool, helping people allocate their energy more efficiently so they didn't merely pursue wishes but wisely pursued them. End of quote. And so, you know, it's not just wishful thinking, it's not naive optimism, it's hope. That's what we're talking about, isn't it? It's hope, it's planning, it's going in what Seneca used to say, nothing should ever be unexpected by us. So you know that something bad's gonna something is gonna disturb, probably something's gonna disturb your perfect day. There's no such thing as perfection, and thank God, otherwise it would be so boring. Every day would be the same if we had perfect days. But you're prepared, you know. And so you dream, you create this energy, you remind yourself that there are constraints in your reality. Maybe, you know, you're not alone, you have people to take care of, you have responsibilities. And then you get on with it, you make a plan. Which takes us to the last part I want to talk about here, because this is really the application of everything that we were talking about. And it's something that we plan a lot with my coaching students. I know I talk a lot about my coaching. Actually, if you're interested in coaching, obviously I have constraints of reality of my own, which are is time and a schedule. But let me know and send me an email. Sorry, and we can arrange something. But anyway, let's move on to that last part, which is whoop. Whoop, W-O-O-P, whoop on. I start with a quote from Gabriel Udigin from that book. She says, "As I started to teach mental contrasting with implementation intentions as a single unified tool, I realized that we needed a better name than MCII. The name WHOOP, which is Wish Outcome Obstacle Plan, came to us almost by accident in the course of fielding a study. We liked how accessible WHOOP was and how well it captured the key steps. As a tool, WHOOP is what psychologists call content neutral. That is, it can be used to help with any kind of wish you might have, short-term or long-term, big or small. If you're a professional, you can use it to reach a new milestone in your career, improve your skills, whatever you can think of. If you're a student, you can apply it to study more productively. If you're a mom or a dad, you can apply it to handle challenging situations with your children more effectively. Anyone can use it in his or her personal life for any purpose. For instance, to form closer relationships with others or improve health." End of quote. Sorry, need to take a sip of water. And I need to talk, I need to learn how to talk better, because every time I record a podcast, my throat gets a little bit tired. So I'm gonna have a look with that. My wife is actually a voice specialist, so I'm gonna ask. So WHOOP, Wish Outcome Obstacle Plan. And this is what I do every time I have a task that I need to do, every time that, you know, there's something that I want to achieve, I write it down on a piece of paper. WHOOP, Wish Outcome Obstacle Plan. It's a very stoic approach, and I absolutely love it. Wish. Well, you know what the wish is. You know what it is that you want to achieve. What do you want to see in your life? What it is that you want, you know, what do you want to get done? What is the goal? What is the target? Outcome. What is the benefit from, you know, from you would experience as a result of that wish? What's in it, basically, what's in it for you? What's in it for the people around you? What's in it for the people you serve? Obstacle. What will get in the way? What might get in the way? What could get in the way? You know, what can you, and what basically what stands between the wish and the outcome? That's what it is, right? What stands between the wish and the outcome? And then plan. First of all, how can we mitigate the risks? Business 101, mitigating risks, right? This is so important. What's the plan to mitigate the risk? How can you reduce the risks? What is the most effective thing you can do to not only to get around the obstacle, but maybe to use the obstacle as an opportunity to go even further in the outcome of the risk, of the wish? If you know how to use these obstacles as opportunity, turn them around, the wish will be smaller than the outcome. The outcome will be way more satisfying than the actual wish was. And here's what she says on this, and this will be the last quote for today's podcast, and then I'm going to leave you alone. She says, I quote, "On a blank sheet of paper, name the wish in 3 to 6 words. Identify the best outcome, also in 3 to 6 words, and write it down." So basically, keep it short. "Now let your thoughts lead your pen, taking as much paper as you need. Then name your obstacle and write it down. Imagine the obstacle, again letting your thoughts wander and lead your writing. To create a plan, first write down one specific action you can take to overcome the obstacle. Write down the time and place where you believe that obstacle will arise. Then write down the if then plan, so if obstacle X occurs, when and where, then I will perform behavior Y. Repeat it once to yourself out loud." End of quote. Okay, so let's recap. You name your wish. What is your wish? 3 to 6 words. Keep it short. Then identify the best outcome benefit in 3 to 6 words. Again, keep it short. Now write down, name the obstacle. Again, try to keep it short. Now write down the if then plan. If XYZ occurs, then I will ABC. This is actually an algorithm in computer science called conditional statements. If this, then that, else. If this, then that, else. If this, then that, else. And when you plan your goals and things you want to achieve in your life, that algorithm is very, 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 very powerful. Very powerful. And you can do this every morning. You don't have to do this once for your big goal. You can break down your big goal. If you have a big goal, break it down into little goals and whoop every one of your little goals. And these little goals, transform them into mini projects. Again, whoop the mini projects. And these mini projects, break them down into very easy, achievable tasks. And again, whoop those really easy, achievable tasks. A little bit of self-promotion here. I'm just finishing up on an app I'm creating from scratch, homemade, taking a little bit more time than I had originally planned. But basically, it will help you do that. So you'll be able to put in some projects, some targets, break them down into tasks. On your dashboard, you'll only have one task at a time, because I don't believe in to-do lists. I believe in the one item list. Just do whatever is the one thing that is the most important, and that might make everything else easy or not important, right? And then whoop it. Why is this thing important? What is the wish? What is the outcome? What's the obstacle? What's the plan? Okay, guys, thanks for listening. I think this episode has been long enough. I hope that it has brought some value to you. I'm always glad to engage in conversation. So if you have any feedback or if you have any questions, if you have any thoughts, just let me know. If you want to record a little short, less than 45 seconds, snippet, audio snippet, I can put it on in the next episode. That way we have some little interactions there. And if what? That's it actually. You know what? Check in the links. I will link all the useful things that you need to know. I'll link the book, of course, and ways to reaching me, and so on and so on. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you taking the time. I am so happy again to be part of your lives, and I really enjoy making those podcast episodes, I have to say. It's actually quite relaxing for me. It's a little bit of a journaling experience, really, when I record them. And so thank you for giving me the opportunity to do so. Take care. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.